This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, February 15th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on Ozarks, discussions at the state capitol about the future of the Arkansas Lottery Scholarships, live music with Still on the Hill, Emily Cates and Mike Shirky inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and more.
First, as we reported a few weeks ago, a bill regarding voter ID is moving through the Arkansas legislature. Arkansas voters are currently asked to show ID when voting. A new bill approved in Senate committee yesterday would require voters to show a government-issued ID when casting a ballot. The Senate State Agencies and Governmental Affairs Committee passed the bill on a voice vote. Its sponsor, Republican Representative Brian King of Green Forest, insists there is voter fraud happening in Arkansas and says the need for the bill is a simple one.
To protect the integrity of the elections. I mean, we see an election after election here in Arkansas, you know, that they continue to say there's no voter fraud in Arkansas. Every time I've brought up a bill, they say there's no voter fraud. Well, there's voter fraud going on.
Opponents insisted the only voter fraud involves absentee ballots, and despite the bill, those would still be an easier target for voter fraud than votes cast in person. William Elamine, who volunteers his time in Lincoln County to drive older voters to their polling places, says the bill will affect elderly Arkansans and that fraud isn't what lawmakers should be focused on in the voting system.
The issue that is going on with election is better education for poll watchers. We need more election monitors. These are the election issues that we have, not voter ID.
Lawmakers went back and forth about the bill for about an hour and 45 minutes. One issue that may have to be worked out is funding. There is no appropriation to pay for voter IDs for those who don't already have a government-issued ID. Senator King told reporters after the meeting that if the Secretary of State's office didn't have money to carry the cost, the bill, should it be made law, wouldn't be implemented.
February is American Heart Month, and recent studies show about 6% of Arkansans have a heart disease diagnosis from a doctor. Lisa Washburn is an assistant professor of health for the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. She says there is a troubling trend in the state.
The percentages for the risk factors like obesity are very, very high. 36% of adults in this state have hypertension, 11% have diabetes, and 40% have high cholesterol. And if you have those conditions, it's really important to be under a doctor's care, to take all your medications like you're supposed to.
She says women can protect their heart health and reduce their heart disease risk by 82% by maintaining a healthy weight, eating a healthy diet, and getting enough physical activity.
The city of Fort Smith is getting 6 new fire trucks in the name of ensuring quality fire coverage for years to come. Nearly a year ago, in March of 2012, Fort Smith residents voted in favor of a more than $9 million bond package for fire improvements. City Administrator Ray Gosak says that the new equipment includes 3 new pumper trucks and 3 new ladder trucks.
And that apparatus is arriving in Fort Smith this week, so we're going to unveil it at the Board of Directors meeting next Tuesday. Purchasing that equipment was one of the promises we made during the sales tax election campaign last year. And so we want to show voters that, you know, we're providing the progress as we promised last year. You know, this equipment will help us maintain our very favorable fire insurance rating in Fort Smith, and that rating affects what property owners pay for insurance.
In addition to the new equipment, the Fire Service Improvement Bond is paying for construction of a new fire station in the Chaffee Crossing area. Construction is expected to be complete by the end of the year.
The Next Step Day Room has officially selected a new executive director. Amy Sherrill has been named to that position, which she has filled on an interim basis since September. She joined the nonprofit as the marketing manager in November 2011. Prior to her time at the Next Step Day Room, she was a news reporter at the Times Record, the Southwest Times Record in Fort Smith. The organization is a homeless service in Fort Smith that offers a day shelter and resource center open weekdays for the area's homeless. The agency also operates 3 support homes in the community, 1 each for homeless military veterans, homeless women, and single homeless men.
The latest numbers from the Arkansas Racing Commission show that wagering on electronic games of skill is already up for the year at the state's two racetracks. According to the latest from Talk Business, Hot Springs-based Oaklawn posted $79.9 million in EGS wagers in the month of January, an increase of 22% over the previous January. Meanwhile, West Memphis-based Southland reported just over $148 million in January EGS wagers, an increase of 13% from January of 2012.
Could be some flurries tonight, mostly cloudy. Otherwise, lows will be in the upper 20s in the Arkansas River Valley, falling to around 20 or 21 for much of northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow, sunny, highs from 41 in northwest Arkansas to 44 in the Arkansas River Valley. And tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows from the mid to upper 20s. It is Friday, February 15th, 2013. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. It covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire region. How are you on this Friday?
I'm doing well, Kyle, and I apologize. You are one of my favorite Valentines, but I didn't get you anything yesterday.
So that's okay. I thought the meteorite was a gesture
okay.
of the City Wire.
Yeah, all right.
You went big.
Yep.
News this week of foreclosure numbers, which seems a little bit ominous for 2013.
Well, yes and no. We've been waiting, frankly, for foreclosure filings to increase. There's a legal issue over in eastern Arkansas in which the court said that the way the foreclosure process was happening was not legal in Arkansas, so it backlogged. It just stopped everything. And so now those foreclosure filings, and it stopped everything in the whole state, now those foreclosure filings are beginning to cycle through. And what we saw in January in all of Arkansas was a 270% increase in foreclosure filings. Now, what we have to think about is that this is really just returning back to the new normal, and those increases aren't that much if you look 4 or 5 years back. So we will probably, Kyle, we'll probably have a spike in foreclosure filings for, I don't know, 3, 6, 9 months. It's just going to have to cycle back through the system.
Well, and speaking of home sales, Washington Benton County numbers for January, the best in 5 years for the first month of a calendar year.
Well, it's a great way to start, and we began to have several months in 2012 where the home sales in northwest Arkansas were strong, impressive, not only in the terms of the number of homes, but in the home price value. And we kept thinking, we were burnt, obviously, several years ago on this, and we kind of kept thinking, well, this wouldn't last. It was a blip, but so far, so good, and especially in Benton County. In Benton County, we've seen, for example, in January 2013, there are 217 homes sold. That's up above the 201 last year. But the volume of those homes, it was $38.2 million this year compared to $33 million last year. So your percentage increase on the volume was higher. And the median home price in Benton County was $140,000 in 2013, up from $137,000, almost $138,000 last year. So everything's heading in the right direction, and the realtors that we interview and talk to, they say they haven't been. It's been a long time since they've been this busy, and I think Kim Souza, in the story she was working on, she finally caught up with the realtor. The realtor was so busy, but finally tracked a realtor down at a home inspection for a deal that was about to close.
One of my favorite, if not my favorite, song by the Mill Brothers was "Up a Lazy River." There's a big question with whether we're going to have a lazy river at the aquatic park in western Arkansas.
That's a Dennis Miller segue. Wow. It's impressive.
You know the song, right?
Well, not as good as you do,
okay,
obviously.
Okay.
But, yes, this aquatics park at Ben Guerin, it's been up and down in terms of how much, what's going to be built, what's it going to cost, that type of thing. And the planners, and this is an interesting thing, when this was first proposed, the City Wire had an editorial in which we suggested the voters not approve this and approve all the other bond packages but not this, because there really wasn't a plan. What was going to be built, how was it going to be funded, and what was going to be the operations and maintenance costs going forward, because we were concerned that was not secure. Well, come to find out, every once in a while, us idiots in the media are correct. And that's what we're seeing. The plans aren't certain. The costs aren't certain. Not only the costs aren't certain in terms of what it's going to cost to build, but what it's going to cost to operate and who's going to share those costs and that type of thing. And so Sebastian County Quorum Court and the Fort Smith Board of Directors began to kind of pull away from some of those plans, and there was backlash from the community about that, suggesting, look, no, you promised we're going to build this. You guys better find a way to make this happen.
Yeah,
so,
it really puts them between a rock and a hard place, because it sounded like from your coverage, some members of the public, you know, thought there's sort of a Music Man thing going on here, a bait and switch, that we want these things, these amenities, including a lazy river, but now you're saying they can't be there because it would cost too much?
Right. And so rock and a hard place is a good way to put it. So it'll be interesting to see what they come back with. But Kyle, it's not just a discussion about what kind of aquatics park we're going to have. I think we now have a discussion about, you know, the trust between citizens. And that may seem silly. You know, we're going to base our trust between citizens and government based on building an extra lazy river or a diving pool. But, yes, it comes down to that, because we were promised it's going to be a great amenity, it's going to be a great draw, and it'll appeal to all demographics in the area. And then we get to the real deal, and, well, it's not going to be like what we said it was.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. Michael, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
All right. You're welcome.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, we dissect a cluster of media mistakes. An Esquire magazine story that claims the Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden has no health coverage. He does. A Washington Post story that heralds free Wi-Fi for all. Not true. And new evidence that Truman Capote finessed some parts of In Cold Blood. Truth and Lies on the next On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The money awarded to Arkansas high school students from the state's lottery is attracting some attention at the state capitol. Ozarks at-large's Timothy Dennis has the story.
A fight over changes to the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery is unfolding in the state capitol. In one corner stands District 17 Senator Johnny Key, a Republican from Mountain Home. Senator Key, along with Representative Jeremy Gilliam of Judsonia, filed a bill earlier this week that Senator Key says would make necessary changes in the amounts awarded to recipients of the Arkansas Academic Challenge Scholarship in order to close a projected shortfall in the lottery scholarship fund.
We were on an unsustainable course that we were paying out more money than we were taking in through the lottery. The reason that we've been able to do that up to this point was because of the first 7 months of sales of the lottery tickets created about an $80 million reserve before we started awarding scholarships. That reserve has been spent down, and we had to fix the solvency issue going forward.
And in the other corner for this match is Key's frequent sparring partner on issues lottery related, former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter. If you'll recall, Halter was one of the loudest cheerleaders for the scholarship lottery when the original proposal went before voters in 2008.
This legislation will make it significantly more difficult for Arkansas students to achieve a higher education. With virtually no warning to tens of thousands of parents and students, this proposed bill fundamentally changes the program to the point where it will reduce the number of Arkansas students able to enter a state college or university. It's a bad idea for students and parents, and it's a bad idea for Arkansas. The fact is that more students have received the lottery scholarship than was initially projected. That's an enormous success that deserves to be built upon rather than cut.
Whereas the current system awards $4,500 annually to students enrolled in four-year colleges and half that amount to students at two-year schools, the proposed change would implement a tiered award system in which four-year students would receive $2,000 in their freshman year and an additional $1,000 in each successive year. Students at two-year schools would receive $2,000 each year. The proposed bill has received criticism that lower awards to incoming freshmen would make it more difficult for low-income students to enter college. Senator Key disagrees with that assessment.
If we did nothing other than just change the scholarship amount, they were going to get $3,500. So there's a $1,500 gap that now those students will overcome. I think a student that wants to go to university will find a way to overcome that through other local scholarships. There are a lot more scholarships available to graduating seniors from high school that can be accessed than what's available to, say, a junior or a senior in college.
Of course, Halter disagrees with Senator Key on this point, saying that the state should do more, not less, in making higher education more attainable and affordable in the state.
You know, when you go out and you vaccinate a population against a disease, if you run out of a vaccine, you don't start cutting the amount of vaccine per patient or don't start leaving people out. Instead, you go manufacture more vaccine. And it's the same principle here.
As far as how he would, quote, manufacture more vaccine for the scholarship lottery system, Halter offered no suggestions other than that he would not do what HB 1295 suggests, though we're sure to hear his plans within the next year and a half as he moves forward with plans to run for governor in 2014. Above all, though, Halter reiterated that he thinks the scholarship lottery has been a resounding success.
The numbers speak for themselves. There have been almost 100,000 scholarships awarded just in the last 3 years. The lottery already has produced more than $300 million of scholarship assistance, which was not there before. We now have triple the amount of financial assistance from the state as we did previously, going into college scholarships for Arkansas students.
But Key says that while his proposal of tiered scholarship awards will help encourage students to complete degrees, the lottery scholarship was never intended to be a primary method of funding a college education.
It was always intended to be an assist. And whether you go to a 2 or 4 year college, this will still be assistance to do that. So I think it still fulfills the original goal of the lottery scholarship, which was to get more college going out of high school into college to advance that. What this proposal does is actually helps us with our goal of completion.
A 2011 report by the Arkansas Department of Higher Education found that 37.8% of first-time freshmen entering a four-year college between 2005 and 2010 completed their degree, while only 19.8% of first-time freshmen entering two-year colleges between 2008 and 2010 graduated from their degree programs. Whatever happens in the legislature with HB 1295, one thing is clear. Though there are more students than ever attending college in Arkansas, converting those students into graduates will likely take more than just a single piece of legislation. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It is Friday, February 15th, 2013. I'm Kyle Callum.
My name is Monique Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And all of us survived Valentine's Day.
We did.
I'm assuming we all got it right.
We did.
Of course.
Excellent.
We did.
Excellent. This is, I keep saying this every week, this is one of those stories that's so fun to tell you about.
Okay, we're all ears.
It's a film, a documentary. It's called Witch Hazel Advent by Sarah Moore Churchill.
Right.
And it's about her grandfather. He and her grandmother met when they were both students at the University of Arkansas, but it wasn't the typical love story. He had been to Korea and come back. Her grandmother was already an adult with four children, wow, raising them on her own, was the brightest mind in the English department at the time. There was quite a bit of difference in their ages, but they fell in love and bought a piece of property out south of Fayetteville, way south, Winslow, West Fork, called Frog Bayou. And it was Sarah's favorite place growing up. It was her grandfather's favorite place. Her grandmother had to come to Fayetteville for care for Alzheimer's. While Grandpa was coming back and forth to Fayetteville, he started working with local writers' groups and really had an artistic coming out. He's a poet. And so when she was in the journalism program at the university getting her master's, she made this documentary film.
Okay.
And it's been shown. It was shown at the Offshoot Film Festival in kind of a working version. And won Best Documentary and Audience Choice.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's being shown this weekend at 3 o'clock Saturday at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. This is the finished version, so if you saw it at Offshoot, it's probably changed a little bit. It's a fascinating, sweet story. She says she didn't intend for it to be a love story, but it turned into one. And what she hopes comes out of it is that perhaps he'll see his poetry published professionally.
Oh, that's very cool.
And he's 83, so we need to get on this.
Okay.
This is free. It's at 3 o'clock Saturday at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. Or on Saturday, you can go to the Rogers Historical Museum and learn something about the Civil War you might not know.
I doubt there's anything about the Civil War you don't know.
Oh, no, there's lots of things I don't know. This one is about a place up by Rogers, up by Pinnacle, called Osage Springs. Do you remember where Tale of the Trout was?
This is crazy. You're the second person in 2 days to ask me that very question, but yes.
Okay. Well, that's Osage Springs.
Yeah.
And it was, as Paul Dolly put it, it was the interstate truck stop for troops coming and going in the Civil War. And he has been studying it. He's also been studying Arkansas's own gray ghost, meaning a Confederate guerrilla. He fell in love with that idea when he was watching a 1950s TV show called The Gray Ghost and ended up being interested in a Confederate guerrilla named William Buck Brown, who basically drove the Union crazy after the majority of the troops had pulled out of Arkansas. He said, if you look through the reports, this guy's name is everywhere.
Huh.
Bothering their supply lines, bothering anything he could about the Union. And so he will be talking at a program titled Civil War Secrets of Osage Springs Saturday at the Rogers Historical Museum. There is a $5 charge for this.
Okay.
And you need to make sure there's room for you. It will also include a Civil War artifact exhibit and a program by Doug Kidd, who's also awesome. Mm-hmm. It's from 10 to 4. The rain date, rain or snow date, is February 23rd.
Okay.
And you can find out more at 621-1154. And then a couple of fast things.
Okay.
Okay.
Grace Kelly, vocalist, saxophone player, and composer. She's not even 21 yet.
Nope. And has something like 6 or 7 CDs to her credit.
Two shows, 7 and 9 tomorrow at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $26.
And last update, tickets moving fast.
Yes.
Don't count on walk-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, very articulate young woman. Potted Potter. When have you seen something at the Walton Arts Center that has caused as much excitement as Potted Potter?
Me personally or
community-wide? Or perhaps among the people I know.
I'm pretty excited.
7 books, 70 minutes, 2 actors. One plays Harry Potter, the other one plays everything else. Showtimes are 4 and 8 Saturday and 2 and 7:30 Sunday, and tickets start at $19. And in Fort Smith, not a lighthearted murder mystery, but not a deep, dark one either. It's called Hickory Dickory Dead. It's the Fort Smith Little Theater. Showtimes are 8 o'clock today and Saturday, 2:30 Sunday, and again next weekend. And tickets are the bargain price of $10.
Not bad at all.
And don't forget Sons of the Prophet this weekend at Theater Squared. The last weekend of Night Must Fall, another thriller.
At ACO.
In the 1930s at ACO. No Sunday matinee, 7:30 today and tomorrow. And 9 to 5, the musical at Rogers Little Theater with a cameo appearance by Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm.
If only two-dimensionally, right?
We should probably clarify that she is on film. But nonetheless, it will be great fun, and that's at 8 o'clock today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday. And more next week. It's that time of year.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Support for KUAF comes from Serta Pro Painters, serving residential and commercial clients with interior and exterior painting and interior design, deck and fence staining, and specialty finishes. Locally owned and operated by Aaron Lewis. Estimates and information available at 1-800-GO-CERTA or certapro.com.
Later this month, a concert featuring 4 of the region's most beloved bands will take place at the Fayetteville Underground. It's already sold out, but in about 6 minutes, some music from some of the musicians involved that we can all hear whether we have a ticket or not.
Arkansas ranks 15th in the nation in the use of out-of-school suspension for all students and 13th in the gap between black and white students in out-of-school suspensions. A report released yesterday by Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families shows that Arkansas schools rely too heavily on such punishments, thus limiting students' opportunities to learn. The report also offers alternative methods. Jerry Delikowski is the director of school policy at AACF and the author of the report Keeping Kids in Class, Fixing Disparities in School Discipline. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with her this morning, and she began the conversation by asking what led to this study.
We had been reviewing some of the national research we've been seeing, such as a report out of the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights on disparity in suspensions, and also if you Education Week's quality counts issue this year, where all the states look to see how they ranked, was focused on school discipline, climate, and culture. So that and a national campaign on solutions, not suspensions, we decided to look at the data in Arkansas and see how we fared.
And the data showed that more minorities are being suspended than white students, correct?
Right. In fact, out-of-school suspensions, black students are suspended five times as much as white students. In-school suspension three times as often as white students, and corporal punishment twice as often as white students.
Five times. That's quite a lot. The higher the rate of out-of-school suspension, then the lower the graduation rates, correct? Isn't
right.
there a correlation?
The research shows that any student that is suspended, out-of-school suspension, is more likely to drop out and not graduate than any other student.
In looking at the report, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it looked like the problem lies within a few districts with a really large percentage of disparity.
You're right that a majority of the districts do a fairly good job. There are a very few districts, but some of them are very small districts, too, that have these issues. So what we found in our research was that there wasn't any consistency in which variables contributed to seeing a high rate of disparity. We looked at school size. We looked at poverty rates. We looked at high percentages of minority students, low percentages, and we didn't find any consistency, which makes us think that the problem doesn't lie with the student behavior or student demographic as much as other variables in the school setting, perhaps even school leadership. Because some districts have very good results that have similar demographics to another district with not very good results.
What kinds of things are kids being suspended for? I know when I was in high school, and this was not quite 15 years ago, but when I was in high school, students were given out-of-school suspension for truancy, which seems sort of counterintuitive.
And they still are in some areas, and that's one of the things that we're hoping through some attention to this, that we will reduce at least out-of-school suspensions and keep students in school and find ways to keep them learning. We don't want to lose learning time because many times these students are the ones that need that learning time the most. So the variety of reasons is very inconsistent across the state for when students get out-of-school suspension or even an in-school suspension.
What are some of your proposed solutions?
Well, with the report, we hope to begin a discussion. We want people to look at the data and see which areas of the state have been successful at reducing disparities and maybe develop some best practices and identify what some of the measures they're taking are that are helping with that and share them with other districts that are having larger amounts of disparity. We also want to encourage the use of research-based strategies such as positive behavior intervention and support systems. We're looking at schools that have restorative justice practices where students meet with a student council in a way to help identify when they've had some kind of behavior incident, other ways to restore the student to the school setting out without using suspension. Those practices do take more time and effort by the staff, but we feel their value is more than compensated by the gains you get in maybe student performance and even student participation and their efforts at the school.
And if people would like to read the report?
We have a link on our webpage, arkansasadvocates.org, and they can get the report there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jerry.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
All right.
That website is aradvocates.org. Tune in to Weekend Ozarks at Large to hear more from Christina's conversation with Jerry Derlikowski, Director of Education Policy at AACF, including proposed solutions from ridding Arkansas schools of corporal punishment.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. I'm inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and I'm calling this an official folk supergroup that I have here. Right?
Kelly makes us feel good.
Yes. I have Kelly Mulholland to my left, Mike Shirky to his left, Donna Stierna to Mike's left, and to her left is Emily Cates. Did I get yes?
Yes,
going
yes.
Clockwise. You're going to play some music, but the reason we're all gathered here is because you're also going to all play music at the Fayetteville Underground on February 21st. Emily?
We are having a wonderful benefit concert to pay for Mike Shirky to have a new mountain dulcimer made to replace one that was unfortunately stolen from him in December. And we have assembled a great lineup. We've got Still on the Hill, who are here today. We have my trio, Outside the Lines. We've got the Mike Sumler Trio with John Johnston and J.T. Huff, and we've got Trout Fishing in America. Mm-hmm. And there's, like most of Mike's shows, there will be two sets with an intermission. In this case, each of the acts will play for, you know, kind of half a set. And we're going to get Mike to play a few songs on the dulcimer also at the event.
Outside the Lines, Still on the Hill, Mike Sumler Trio, Trout Fishing America. This program... This bill has never been in existence before, has it?
Never.
I guess not.
No, Mike just has a lot of talented friends, and we could have had plenty more, but we thought we'd limit it to four acts.
And is Baird Blaine is going to be making the dulcimer for him?
Yeah, we've commissioned Baird Blaine to make a new dulcimer, and he probably won't have the dulcimer done by the show. But he's got a lot of other work, but he is going to make one, and Mike maybe. Tell him what happened, what was about the robbery.
I'll just point out that Baird is a luthier and a member of Three Penny Acre as well.
Yes.
That's correct.
So how long had you had the dulcimer?
Well, I built this dulcimer about 1983 or somewhere in there. I really can't remember. And I took a little course that was offered here in town, and I had already played the dulcimer, and I wanted a new one, and people who I was looking at that time wanted, you know, most of them were going for $500 or more, which was a considerable sum then. And so I took this course, and it turned out, by the luck of the draw, this dulcimer had a really good tone.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
It was quite famous. And,
yeah.
And it's going to be quite a challenge to replace, in fact. I mean, what were the exotic woods in that thing?
Catalpa wood.
Catalpa wood. I've never heard of that being used.
I know. And then the sides and the fretboard in the back were in the headstock is a cherry.
Wow.
In fact, the headstock that I carved out came out of an old piano. It was a piece of cherry wood that was... Yes. The soundboard for this piano.
I find that a lot of dulcimers really don't have much horsepower, and this one did. It could keep up with the whole ensemble.
Yeah.
And it had, but it was not just horsepower. It was also quality. It was rich.
It was really rich. Yeah.
And I already miss it.
I miss it a lot.
And so, many people listening don't know what happened. Someone broke into your place and took it.
Yeah. I was not at home, and somebody kicked in the back door. And apparently about noon, it was 12, 12, 12.
Hmm.
And I'm a deer hunter, and they stole some an old antique shotgun I had and some other things, but they took the mountain dulcimer, I guess, to beat a deer on the head. I don't know.
They thought it was firewood.
Well, they think it was in a case that might have resembled a gun case, I think.
Wow.
And I was in Stuttgart attending a funeral.
Oh. Now, we know that it wasn't a listener of KUAF who took it. We know that, right? But if you know someone who suddenly has come up with a wonderful mountain dulcimer.
It's oversized. One thing, it's real dark wood, and it's quite oversized. It's much thicker than average dulcimer. I bet it's only almost 5 inches thick.
Yeah, it's pretty thick. Yeah.
And really unusual design. Obviously not factory made. But, you know, I'm excited about this because and I hope everybody listening also realizes that this is a chance to do something for Mike Shirky, who has been doing something for us for 30 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he has been providing folk music. He's been the anchor of folk music in our town for 30 years. And so we have an opportunity now to do this thing for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great.
And Baird is such an amazing, amazing luthier. He will rise to the challenge and create a dulcimer
worthy of
Mike.
This is going to be his first one, but he's already doing research, and I think he's going to build two at once. Mm-hmm. He's someone else's offer. Hey, a few years ago, he actually talked to me about building one, so now he gets his chance.
Yeah,
I know he'll do good.
And I'm overwhelmed that this
Baird is quite wonderful, everything he makes. So.
Now, mountain dulcimer is the dulcimer that a lot of people, if you grew up in the Ozarks, are most familiar with. It's kind of that figure eight sort of look.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Or you know,
yeah. But what you have today, Michael.
Well, now, this is another instrument with a long story. This is, I guess, a long-neck dulcimer, you could call it. It's beautiful wood. It's made by a luthier from Austin, Texas, Steve Wise, who Emily introduced me to. And it's made out of koa wood and spruce top, and it looks like a bouzouki.
It does.
Or a mandocello, you might say. Yeah. And it's got a nice tone. And I play this, but the traditional dulcimer, and I added some frets to it, was there's just a lot of things I can't do on this that I could do on that. I mean, it's
a different animal.
It's nice, but
it's not the same.
The instrument that Mike has with him today, this Steve Weiss dulcimer that looks like a bouzouki or mandocello, is played, you know, like a guitar or a bouzouki or mandocello, but it's tuned like a dulcimer. But the mountain dulcimer is actually played horizontally. You put it on your lap or on a horizontal surface, and you play it that way. So it's played differently, and it's a different instrument.
Yeah, this is played, you can play it like a rock star.
Like,
and that's
you
how
are,
you play
Mike.
It, yes. Well, let's see. We've got Kelly with banjo, Mike with dulcimer.
Go ahead.
Got the fiddle down there with Donna, guitar with Emily.
Yep.
And only this time I'm going to play it on my lap on this song.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
This is a good Arkansas song to start off with here.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
Little cabin door and fiddled at a tune that he liked to hear. A jolly old tune that he played by ear. It was raining hard, but the fiddle didn't care. He sawed away at the mountain there. Roofs it leaked like a waterfall. Didn't seem to bother that old man at all.
is great, the Arkansas Traveler. I love the sound of a dulcimer. Some people who aren't musicians won't understand the relationship that someone has with an instrument that they've had for decades. Like, Kelly, I look at your banjo.
That's true.
And that is not a new banjo.
That's true. I know it would. I would be heartbroken. I can very much sympathize. And the fact that he made it himself is absolutely irreplaceable. This will be a wonderful facsimile of that instrument because Baird is extremely talented and very trustworthy about such things. But still, it won't be the same thing.
Donna, what about that fiddle you have?
This is a fiddle from Europe, and it's hundreds of years old, and it was gifted to me. And it's priceless. I just don't know what I would do if I lost it.
Yep.
And the guitar I'm playing is a custom guitar that was made for me when I – no, actually, it wasn't made for me. It was made when I lived in Texas by a luthier named Jamie Kinscherf, and it was actually made for a friend of mine who later sold it to me. But I've become very attached to it, and it's a great instrument too. So,
well, can we hear another tune?
Yeah. What's Shokin? Number two?
Should we do a Shokin Farewell?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We'll do something real pretty here.
I'm just going to second you here, Mike.
All right. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Mike Shirky, Emily Cates, and the duo Still on the Hill, Donna Stierna and Kelly Mulholland, were inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week. The concert is sold out. You can learn more about the fundraising effort by calling 409-1224. And we'll also hear more from our session inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio on weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF.
Ron Rash's stories and novels are often set in Appalachia, but readers everywhere will glimpse something familiar.
The writers I love most have been able to find the universal in the particular. Eudora Welty once said, "One place understood helps us understand all other places better."
Ron Rash's short stories, Nothing Gold Can Stay, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
There are more ways than ever to let your voice be heard or your opinion known. An artist coming to Fayetteville and Fort Smith soon says the printed word on a poster remains one of the most arresting ways to capture others' attention. Katie Hendrickson recently talked to Amos Kennedy Jr. in advance of his visit.
Printmaker, artist, and activist Amos Paul Kennedy Jr. will be visiting our listening area next week to give workshops on letterpress printing. Self-described as a humble Negro printer, Kennedy is a recent Southern transplant to Detroit, where he's just raised funds through the site Indiegogo to open a printing plant for all. It wasn't until Kennedy was 40 years old that he fell in love with letterpress, abandoning his comfortable middle-class life as a software developer for what he deems the subversive art of the written word via typographic posters, some of which are on display in the exhibition cases at the Fine Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville right now. So, what exactly drew Kennedy to the art of letterpress printmaking?
I
think it has to do partially with the fact that I've always loved the book, and it was a way for me to relate to the book. And so I was able to make my own book, and I thought that was very fascinating and very empowering, because most people do not make a book. They read a book, they buy a book, they may write a book, but to say I printed, bound, and produced this book is very rare.
The visual elements of Kennedy's prints rely heavily on typography, sometimes layer upon layer. In Kennedy's posters, the type is the image.
I think that comes from my study of calligraphy, where I learned that letters are images that you make. And so I try to reproduce that with letterpress. And this is one of the reasons I do layering, because it gives me a greater freedom to work with this letters as medium and images. And so you create these images on the page.
In an age when we're used to digital printing or just reading things on screens, the process of letterpress is a fascinating one.
Letterpress printing is a relief form of printing that is familiar to some of your listeners as a linoleum cut or woodcut or wood engraving, where you're printing off of a raised surface. What makes letterpress printing different is that you're actually printing letters themselves. And letterpress printing evolved in the 15th century through the work of Johann Gutenberg in Germany, who developed the method of printing with movable type. And for the next 500 years, it dominated printing, commercial printing in the world. And it was until the late 60s, early 70s, the medium that most things were printed in America or in the world. So what it is that you set type, and the type can be, in the case of books, metal type made primarily from lead. You set each individual character, and then after you've done a line, you put it into a galley, you set the next, until the text that you're setting, whether it's a poem or a short story, is completed. At that point, you put it on the press, and you pull an image of that type that you just set. And the press, can think of a press, again, if you've ever done a spoon rubbing from something, that's the same sort of thing. It's a matter of applying enough pressure to release the ink from the form, which is the type that's been set, onto the paper. And that is, in a nutshell, what letterpress printing is.
There are so many options for printing these days. So what exactly drew Kennedy to letterpress?
Well, I think the thing that first drew me to it was the availability of the classes that I could take. And that, again, it dealt more with letters than images such as a drawing, which you think about lithos or etching or engraving. So again, it's about this letter form that drew me to letterpress printing, because I've never really drawn in my life. So that was one of the deterrents to doing, say, lithos or wood engraving. But this, where the letter was already formed, and then you created the words and you created this image on the page for people to read, attracted me. And I think also the fact that I had studied calligraphy, and there was a close correlation between the two.
Kennedy has been described as a social irritant, and many of his posters convey thoughts such as this one from Albert Camus, which states, "The purpose of a writer is to keep civilization from destroying itself." He did a series of prints celebrating Rosa Parks. Kennedy believes in the power of the printed poster.
The thing about being a printmaker is that you disseminate information. And in the age of the internet, where they say, well, why do you need printed matter? Why do you need posters? Because you can have a website, you can tweet, you can do all these other things. I consider those methods of communication passive, in that people go and find them. So if you're interested in letterpress, you go to the web and you look up letterpress and you find it. And so you engage with that website. A poster I consider active. I consider it because you put a poster up and it invades your visual space, whether you want it to or not. So you put a poster up on the street and you pass by and you notice it. You may not stop and read it, but you notice it. So it invades your visual space. And I think this is the power of the poster or the printed word over the digital word. As a social irritant, it is the dissemination of information that I think is the first calling of printing. And this will create all sorts of controversy. As I tell people, there is nothing more dangerous than the printed word. Ideas are why people have wars. Ideas are why people engage in activities that you may not like. And the printed word allows these ideas to be disseminated a lot better, a lot quicker than the spoken word.
Not satisfied only with making posters, he wants to share the liberation that comes with putting together type onto paper with those who might not know about the process.
I like to give workshops because people actually get excited about putting ink on paper, because many of them do not have the opportunity, although they interact with the printed word every day. And I like to have people, especially people under the age of 20 and over the age of 6 months. There's a twinkle that comes in their eyes and the excitement where if they are able to read, they see this form on the press bed and they can't make it out. But then when they pull the print, then suddenly they can read it, because on the press bed, everything is backwards. And so suddenly they see that they made this. And they, you know, children get very delighted about it. And so basically the workshop is an opportunity for the community to see the letterpress and to actually use it to print something and to have that experience. I think the universities are reaching out to the communities to say, here's a resource that we have and we'd like for you to see it in action. So please come and participate.
Amos Paul Kennedy Jr.'s broadsides are on display at the Fine Arts Center on the U of A campus in Fayetteville. He'll stop for a visit in Fayetteville February 27th for both a workshop and lecture. He then heads down to Fort Smith for events February 28th and March 2nd. For more information on his Fayetteville events, visit art.uark.edu. For Fort Smith, call 479-788-7333. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring travel and tourism in the February 18th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. Current edition available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news. Support also comes from Lason's Painting, offering services from customized home and furniture painting to commercial projects. References, a photo gallery, and press information available on the web at lasunspainting.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Potter Junction.
Potter Junction. You're going to go see Potted Potter this weekend.
I am.
All the Harry Potter stuff into an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm real excited.
I can tell. College baseball starts.
Today?
Yes. First pitch at 3:05. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to 7 o'clock, it's already over. Tomorrow, I'll be behind the microphone. Chuck Barrett will be with basketball, so I get to sit in. And I'm very excited
about baseball.
That. For baseball. Yes.
Very excited about that.
Yes. Good Thursday night?
Yeah.
Me too. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ms. Megrahita.
Christina Thomas, be with me Sunday morning at 9 for weekend. You and I back together on Tuesday.
Back together on Tuesday.
And I will host the Monday edition of Ozarks.
Solo.
All by myself.
All by yourself.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks again for listening, guys, and I hope you have a great weekend.